you can call us Indy 1015.
Hamilton's home for alternative.
Hello, everybody. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for spending time with me tonight. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm hanging out with Kieran Gulati. He's the Hamilton-based guitarist of multiple bands, including No Agreements, Cute, Memory Lakes, and McBrown Group. You can find Kieran online at cgulati_43 on Instagram, and all of his bands are on all of your streaming services of choice and also Bandcamp. So go check them out. And hey, Kieran.
Hi, Sarah. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. It's late morning for me, but I'm at my coffee and I'm alive.
Fantastic. I've got mine here too beside me, so we're prepped. We're ready.
Nice. Amazing.
Yeah. Just to kind of give a little intro to everybody listening, how would you describe your personal sound and style as a musician?
Well, I guess my sound comes from I tend to pull a lot of things pretty directly from the music I listen to, and sometimes on purpose, sometimes accidentally, as I'll go back and listen to some things I like and go, oh yeah, I totally yanked that right from there. But it's I tend to follow my ears a lot, while also I guess trusting my post-secondary educationally trained intuition, and they kind of go hand in hand in helping me kind of something that a couple of professors I remember saying is that the best move is always to serve the music. So I guess that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Just playing what I hear in my head, not necessarily literally, but like kind of like in order to build the atmosphere and take the music where I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it kind of wanting to go. And it always depends on what kind of music I'm playing that that comes from. But it's always in general, it's always the same kind of thing. You know, if I'm hearing a build, I'm gonna kind of like help try to build up to something. Or if I'm hearing something come down, I'll try to, you know, kind of I guess kind of telling a story in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether I'm in a group context or just playing by myself in my bedroom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
Well, as far as guitar players go, Frank Zappa is a big one. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to him for a long time. And again, one of those things where incidentally, a lot of the things that he's played and the way that he plays will just end up happening when I'm playing. Not to compare myself, of course. I guess another, and do you mean, like in general, or do you want like specific?
You can totally go in general. I mean, you know, I know that people, you know, you can take sound and style influence from musicians. You can take mm-hmm. production style, you can take stage presence, you know, like, there's a bunch of different influences. So, you know, go ahead.
Okay. Sure. As far as just like technical aspects, yeah. Frank Zappa is a big one for me. I'm a really big fan of the group Swans, and mm-hmm. how they build things. There's a lot of simplicity, and especially their later work. that I take a lot of influence from, and just especially you can hear that in the tracks that I sent you. Like you hear a lot of it in the tracks I sent you. Actually, we're all everyone in Cute are big Swans fans. I'm blanking. Mark Hollis from Talk Talk is a big influence because of the way he uses like silence. Again, simplicity, I think there's beauty in simplicity. You can really hit someone hard with just one note, if you know how to use it, and know what to do with it. On a more literal sense, there's a Japanese group called Les Réalisés Dénudés, and they were like a seminal noise rock band from the early 60s. A lot of Velvet Underground influence on them, and they used to use a lot of like feedback that would almost pretty much sonically take over whatever you were hearing. It would just play so loudly that all you would be hearing is the guitar feeding back, and blowing out all their microphones and everything like that. And again, it's just like building atmosphere and like getting lost in the sound kind of thing. I really like that. So I try to utilize that, in my music, as well, or I guess in my playing. I don't know. trying to think who else. People like Adrian Belew and Nick Reinhardt because of their use of like effects pedals and trying to incorporate that and how those different things can play into each other and using the pedal board as an instrument. I'm trying to think of other specific people that kind of come to mind. Obviously, I listen to a lot of jazz, so like people like Joe Henderson and Wayne Shorter's music is really nice.
Included a lot.
There's definitely a lot more. If you catch me in the right conversation, my ADHD will ramble for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and that'll be it.
Totally.
Yeah, probably later on, maybe in 10 minutes, I'll be like, oh yeah, and then that'll be it.
Sure. Yeah. Just let me know. Yeah. And when did you first get into playing music? Did you start on an instrument? And what instrument was that?
Playing music a very, very long time ago when I was a little dude. I took piano lessons with a next door neighbor, and she was like a trained classical piano teacher. I did piano lessons as like a 3, 4, 5 year old, and fell out of it because I hated sitting down and practicing. I would just get really frustrated and not want to focus on anything. When I was in grade five, I started getting into like, I had friends that were showing me like classic rock and I thought it was really cool. And all I wanted to be was be a rock star. So, when I was in grade six, I got a electric guitar. I started guitar lessons and then I really liked it. So I got an electric guitar and it was all I did from then until like, and then until now. And I just took it further and further and further and further, and set kind of goals for myself. And the things I wanted to do when I started, I'm now able to do now. But of course, as I've learned more about music and as I've discovered more and heard more things that I didn't think I liked until now, my goals have expanded, of course. And I'm sure in a few years I'll be able to do all the things that I want to do now, but we'll again have more goals. So yeah, so I started on piano as a little tiny kid, and then picked up guitar when I was starting middle school, I guess. In high school, I was in the I was in the percussion section in music class. So I learned how to play drums, doing that, which is pretty handy. But yeah, and then guitar has kind of been my thing. And then it was, I guess, in the middle of college, I started getting into effects pedals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And as much as I like playing guitar, I also love to just kind of like let the guitar just kind of feed back, and I'll sit on the floor and I'll make kind of like don't want to sound too pretentious, but sonic soundscapes, with, you know, with the different, and just kind of hearing different things and playing around with knobs, to make other pedals do other things. And then they all kind of affect each other, and using that as its own instrument, kind of like an incidental, kind of thing. Yeah. And here we are. And that's the story so far. Who knows what's going to happen in a year or so, but yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, are there any instruments, that you'd really like to learn, or any like musical tools that you haven't tried yet, but you'd like to learn how to use?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been thinking kind of recently, we need to go back to the piano and kind of sit mm-hmm. down and, figure it out. Cause I kind of know how everything's laid out, and I know how to mm-hmm. hold my hands properly.
When did you play last?
I teach piano, so I'll okay. I'll sit down and like have the basics, and my roommate plays piano as well, so I'll sometimes I'll like mess around on his piano. Mm-hmm. So yeah, piano, and again same thing with drums. I love playing the drums. I'm horrible at it, and it's a pretty classic move for like someone who's trained on one instrument, and then they try to sit down the drums, and they'll hear something in their head but not have the physicality to be able to play it. So then okay. it just comes out all kind of messy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess tightening up that would be really fun. Just so that if I ever wanted to do it for fun, I'm able to play the things that I hear. I also really want to get into modular synthesis, mm-hmm. because again, something fun about just hitting a button and letting it do its own thing, and you know, interacting with it and then seeing what happens if I plug one thing over here and then plug it back in over here and then change that, like, oh, I've changed this or turned this knob, and then that's now sounds completely different, and just letting things build kind of organically. But yeah, it's a bit of a monetary investment, which is the only thing that's stopping me. But eventually, yeah. And then hopefully having that come into play with my guitar as well. Other instruments, I don't know. Saxophone looks fun, but again, this is not only so much time in the world, and, there are other things to do.
Absolutely. At what point did you start creating your own music as opposed to playing other people's?
Wasn't until college. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I didn't really know anyone that played. Well, I knew a lot of people that played instruments, but everybody played guitar. And if there were other people that played other instruments, I didn't know, and I'm sorry. Listening. Otherwise, why didn't you tell me to start a band with you? Oh, no, I'm kidding. Yeah, I just didn't know anybody that played drums or bass or whatever. You know, just playing on my own all through high school, which was, you know, I wanted to start a band but didn't know anybody, mm-hmm. which is, again, okay. And then it wasn't until... I went to Mohawk College mm-hmm. in the music department there. Mm-hmm. When I started meeting people that obviously played other instruments, but also had similar tastes and mm-hmm. influences, liked the ideas I brought to the table as much as I liked the ideas that they brought to the table, mm-hmm. in which I formed my first band. I don't want to say mine. It wasn't my band. It was our band. The first band I was a part of that played entirely original music, which was Memory Lakes. Yeah. So that, and that was that. And I've been, you know, it's, I wouldn't say I ever sit down and work on my own music, but I do write songs here and there. And, one day, someday I keep setting goals and then they go by and I go, I don't need to, whatever. And then, so, one day, someday I will turn different songs I have sitting in voice memos in my brain into some sort of thing for people to consume and buy and flip on Discogs and pirate and, you know, upload to YouTube. And, yeah. Yeah. So I would like to do it, very soon, but finding the motivation, as we all know, as, 20 somethings living in, this day and age is, hard to find intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm. As creatives in their 20s, living in this decade, it sucks.
It's a wild time. Mm-hmm. And I believe it exists and it is out there. I think it's just, it's, outside influences in our own, mm-hmm. our own selves feeling pressure either from someone else actually pressuring us or us pressuring ourselves that we have to do something at a certain point or that, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, society and the human brain are both very weird organisms. So, and then since then, I joined McBrown and then, Cute is very new and very mm-hmm. exciting. That's when I started writing, playing my own music.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Cool. So you went to Mohawk. How was that experience? And like, what was the most important lesson that you took away from that program?
I went to Mohawk College music, program. A lot of people have, opinions about it. Whether that could mean anything,
I'm
not implying anything. A lot of people have opinions about it. I think, what I took away from it was the sense of community and how mm-hmm. much fun I had being in that environment where, mm-hmm. I did was play guitar all day and hang out with my friends and, build each other up musically. And mm-hmm. I think it was one of those kinds of, programs where you, take out what you put into it. So if, mm-hmm. you know, people have said have their thoughts about it, but if you wanted to, you know, push yourself and you asked for it, the people that you asked would give it to you, and the people who asked got it, or got as much as they could, and they're doing what they can with it. I met all of my friends either in that program or because of that program. All of my friends. There's, I don't know who's listening to this, a lot of people I hold very dear to my heart. I have been because of that program, and it was a great way to kind of become. It was an easy gateway, a bit of a fast pass ticket into becoming a part of the Hamilton music scene, which I think is pretty great. Mm-hmm. I like this city because it's kind of like if a city was a small town, mm-hmm. we have a financial district, but it's four buildings on one block and mm-hmm. we've got cool hipster craft beer bars and vintage shops, but there's two, and everyone, you know, there's an amazing music community. There's an amazing queer community. There's an amazing skate community. But everyone knows each other. So every time I leave my house, I see someone I know, or I see one mm-hmm. of my friends. And then, when everyone knows what's going on, and it's a, or I'll meet someone new and they'll know eight people that I know. And like, how do you, well, I went, did this with this person and did that. And then I was in this band, or I went to high school with, or I grew up next to, or he's my, that's my uncle's cousin's brother's daughter. And I'm like, oh, okay. Great. So yeah, what did you ask me again?
Good question. I forget as well. Where are my questions? How was your experience in Mohonk, and what was the best lesson that you took away from the program?
Okay, I didn't diverge too far from that. There was a big sense of community, and I've heard from other people that went to, that finished Mohawk, and did other another program somewhere else, that where maybe the you know, was a little bit more challenging as far as knowledge goes, in a good way. They didn't have that same sense of, you know, we're a family, which is kind of how it felt. Because there was so little of us. Like, I am really close friends with people that were 2 years ahead of me in graduating, as well as people who were 2 years below me when I was graduating. So everyone, when I say everyone knows each other from that program, like it spreads across different generations of Mohawk music students. And then with the different jams that happen in the city, you know, what happens at Corktown now, what used to happen at the Cat and Fiddle, rest in peace, where students, alumni, professors would hang out together and stuff like that. And everyone was generally pretty welcoming. At least the people within the Mohawk community, you know, it's always, I always loved it when I would go out and see some of the first year students coming out to these jams and checking it out for the first time. And, you know, we'd always try to be as encouraging, like come every week and keep making this happen and showing you that you're interested. And then tell the people that, you know, the years that happen after you, or you know, that are underneath you, to come to and like make this a thing and be like, keep it going and show that people are interested, because I think it's really important to have that kind of thing, that kind of blatant communal activity going on. And there is never enough of it, I say. That is my answer to that question.
And did you grow up in Hamilton?
No, I grew up in Oakville, which is hilarious. It's a cultural desert if you ever are thinking about visiting.
I have some family there.
It's as someone who was into the kinds of things that I was into growing up, that did not drive a car, you know, being stuck in a upper middle class suburb where nothing is walking distance away and buses stop running at 7 p.m. on Saturdays, it's a bit of a nightmare. And I pray for those Sheridan College artsy kids who have nothing to do besides hang out in school. There's two venues, which I don't know if they were around or not when I was younger, which, again, if they were, that's awesome. If not, I mean, then that means they're, because I only heard about them when I was in college. So just goes to show how bustling the music scene is at Oakville. It's definitely not the kind of, I've had people where I tell them I'm from Oakville and they go, really? Like, yeah, I know. Like, just kind of look at me.
I'm from Beamsville. Do you know what Beamsville is?
I've heard of Beamsville, but I wouldn't. Yes. What kind of environment are they?
It's like a small farm town.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, that doesn't make
sense. No public transit. Yeah. No venue, no mall. You know, you have to drive half an hour to St. Catharines to go to a mall.
Oh my god.
Yeah, lots of camo. That sort of thing.
So, nightmare.
Yeah,
that's a nightmare. Yeah, if everyone in Oakville is either like it works in Toronto and they commute, or I grew up in a pretty artsy, generally pretty artsy household, comparatively to the other people that were around me. So, I did have that kind of influence growing up too. So it's not like I was a total loner, but yeah, it was being an indie rock kid living in Oakville is kind of a weird thing.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Now that you're in Hamilton, who are some local artists around here that you'd love to see get more attention?
Ooh, that's a really good thing. I gotta deep dive into my database here that need more attention. I think I'm gonna include ones that are already getting a lot of attention. Because the first band to come to mind is Captain Wildchild.
I just had them on last week.
They're besides being no, they are not, I'm not sponsored. They're not paying me. They're very, very good friends of mine. All of them are. And I love them all as musicians and also as people and as friends. And they are great. Their new album is spectacular. I saw a group called Zudo that were really, really good. Someone mentioned they were from Mississauga, but the drummer is from here, so I don't know. I have one. My dear friend Aoife is again a homie of mine. And she's got an EP I believe she's working on, and she hasn't played any shows yet, but she's got one single out and it's like genuinely breathtaking. I don't like to talk about like music my friends made and say, oh, it's so great just because they're my friends, even though it is great. Captain Wildchild's album is really solid. I loved it. Especially the last track, and the single that Aoife put out is like genuinely like incredible. And I'm not hyperbolizing when it's like,
it's
insane. Yeah. It's, it's really, really great. Again, Mohawk alum.
Okay. So speaking of local musicians, we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a single from one of Kieran's bands, Cute. Voodoo Dissolve Part 1 is about anger towards authority and wanting to break free of controlling leaders. And then the song will play here.
Amazing.
And then we will bring everybody back in 3, 2, 1. For anybody just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and I'm speaking with Kieran Galati, a Hamilton-based guitarist for the bands Cute, Memory Lakes, and McBrown Group. We just came back from playing a single from Cute called Voodoo Dissolve Part 1. Part 2 is coming at the end of this episode. How long did it take to write that track, Kieran?
That's kind of interesting. That's an interesting question because we didn't really write it. We just kind of jammed it out.
Okay.
You know, it was one of those things,
spontaneous.
You know,
sometimes.
Yeah. We actually went into that. It was at a rehearsal and we tried to record, we record all of our rehearsals. And we went in, we thought, let's write some more music. Let's like sit down and chart things out and write things down and like actually come up with, you know, let's write like 8, like 3-minute tunes, a few little songs to go along with our, cause we have one big long 25-minute long tune, which is on our demo, on Bandcamp and it's on Bandcamp and on CD at your local, Hamilton, record store. So that's what we said we were going to do. And then, one person played one instrument and then someone else came in with another instrument. And then we just kind of ended up just playing the song kind of the first thing we all heard like I mentioned before, kind of serving the music. So we just kind of like played what we all kind of thought was, you know, kind of cooking. And then, you know, if someone has an idea, they'll kind of look up and cue into something, or they'll make it obvious that something's going to build into like a heavier section or something like that. And then again, what I'm singing was literally like, I just thought someone should be singing here. I kind of want to do it. And I think I have one thing that I think would sound good. And then I said it. And then I said it over and over again until I could think of a second thing to say, that kind of added to that sound, to what else, what the other thing I was saying. Right. So you could say that it took 3 seconds to write, or because we didn't actually write it, or you could say it took, you know, 7 minutes to write, because that's how long the song is, or at least the recording I sent. So the recording that is on the demo, which again, available on Bandcamp, it's free. Take it, have it for free, and spread it around, and send it to friends, and email people about it. The recording on there was that jam was literally the first time that song was played. And then the recording that you just heard, was a recording from our show that we played on, August 20th at Into the Abyss. And if you want to hear it again, if you come to our next show, we will have CDs available of the live recording of the show. If you missed the show and would like one. So that's how long it took to write that song.
Amazing. And you said the lyrics are kind of basically the same on Voodoo Dissolve Part 1 and Part 2. They kind of have the same meaning.
Yeah, it's a similar, again, Daniel would be the one to really kind of pick his brain about that. There is a demo recording where again, he heard something in his head and then he just started screaming, and it sounded fantastic. So there's a little passage you can hear him say. It's kind of hard to hear in that recording, but there's a passage you hear him say at the beginning and then of part 2, which you will hear shortly. Stick around. And then he goes into yelling. I'm not gonna. I kind of spoil it earlier in the thing. Oh my god! But he starts yelling something throughout the song. Again, it's all building intensity. At the show, for those at the show, you might remember, but at a certain point during that song, he just dropped onto the floor and was laying down on his side, huddled up, screaming his head off. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So I guess similar kind of themes. There's a couple other songs that, again, similar themes to that. There's a general idea of, you know, we can do what we want to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And how was the song recorded and who produced it?
We produced it, so the recordings you are hearing are from an iPhone that was sitting on top of the mixer. Mm-hmm. At the back of the venue, at the back of Into the Abyss, behind myself and our drummer Zach Vernon. The demo was a 4-track cassette recorder with a single Shure SM58 tucked in the back corner of the room. Mm-hmm. That's it. We also had a tape recorder going during the show. If people went to the show and were wondering what the microphone was that was hanging above the band, that's what that was for. Mm-hmm. So we're going to kind of mix together the phone recording and we'll build a kind of melded together type thing to build this one single, you know, master take. The only people that have been involved in recording have been us, besides the person whose name escapes me that lent us the tape recorder.
Do you guys typically self-produce?
Yeah, well, again, we're super new, so we've only had one show. Mm-hmm. And don't really have, and again, the only recordings that we have are our rehearsals and then the show we just did.
Yeah.
Which will be available. Mm-hmm.
And what do you hope your listeners take away from Voodoo Dissolve Part 1?
I think from that specific song.
I guess both songs, you know, because you say they have similar meanings and they're kind of part one, part two. Yeah, what would you say, what do you hope they take away from
those? I think they can take away whatever they like. If they want to have it gently playing in the background while they enjoy a glass of wine and maybe wear a turtleneck and sit in a faux leather armchair with the fire going, then they can do that. On their 24-karat gold original master pressing CD. Mm-hmm. Their beautiful Bang & Olufsen stereo set. I think the best way to hear it is I try to put this in the music that I make and play. I hope if people want to do it, like that's what I'm putting into it, is that what really music will mean a lot to me if something happens and I hear something, it makes me stop what I'm doing and pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. So I hope it catches people's ears. And I hope they kind of appreciate the general sound of the music itself. Mm-hmm. If they want to take a message away from the lyrics, that's amazing. That's awesome. If they want it to, if they are interested in it at all, I think I can speak for the rest of the band too. We are all very grateful for that, period. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of very generous comparisons after the show we played. you know, again, the Swans comparison was, because what they used to do, apparently they would, when they played a show, they would lock the door and turn the heat up and everybody would be sweating like crazy in these venues that this band would play in back in the early 80s, which incidentally is what happened at the show. If you're at the show, you've probably never sweat that much before in your whole life, because that's what everyone told me when they went, because we had to close the door to avoid noise complaints. And there was a big, big, lovely fan that we forgot to turn on. So it was probably a solid 45 degrees Celsius in that tiny little room. I was dripping sweat for sure. And everyone else told me they were too. I think what people did take away from my music at the show is when we started playing our big, long 25-minute piece, called Let Your Mouth Digest It. It starts with a very, very quiet part. And what I noticed is that nobody made a sound during it, and everybody was paying attention, and that made me feel very good. Pay attention. If you listen to it for the first time, pay attention until you don't, or listen to it until you do. I guess that's my hope. If someone pays attention, and even if they don't like it, they have genuine reasons to not like it, and you know, they can write me a dissertation and I will agree, or you know what, I mean, as long as people hear it, whether they like it or not, doesn't matter to me. I just, the people who like it will seek it out, and the people who don't will are allowed to not like it, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Kieran, what can we look forward to seeing from you?
Q has a few shows. We have so far one show that has been announced that is coming up. That's all I'm gonna say in that direction. On September 16th at Doors Pub, it's Friday, we are playing with King Bull, Office Politics, and Bad Crush. Mm-hmm. And that'll be on again September 16th. Cute has some demo CDs. We've got some at Dr. Disc, we've got some at Into the Abyss. We have some at Revolution Records, I believe. If you're in Toronto, I think we have one at Sonic Boom. Go get it. Go run. There's only one. Oh, my God. If you missed the show that we played at Into the Abyss, but you want to hear it, then get your butt to the show on Friday, on September 16th, because we will be selling a incredibly limited run of CDs. And I'm not sure if we'll have tapes. I thought we were, but I'm not sure. But I think maybe CD copies of the live set in its entirety. If you want to hear that, they will be available. We have shirts as well, which we sold out of at our first show, but we'll have more available. Thank you. They're very cool. They're very cute. Ha 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 ha. I believe that's it. I think there are other things, but I don't think I can talk about them yet. So I'll just let that be a little teaser to you all, to keep your peepers aware of what's going on.
Check it out. We can be social too. Hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @Indie1015FM.
Stronger than thousand lies, but I know you wanna hesitate, and I try to stop, but Tomorrow.